food.
Growing up in 1970s Singapore, writer and cook Sharon Wee witnessed massive change as Singapore transformed from a steamy colonial outpost of the British Empire into a centre of world finance, a megacity of skyscrapers and modernity. But as she observed that transition, her family life still had deep roots in ways of her mother and grandparents. A very typical Peranakan family, as she puts it. Sharon left Singapore in 1992 to work in Hong Kong, and her career in marketing and advertising took her all sorts of places, to Beijing and Shanghai, and in 1996 to New York City, where she completed an MBA, raised a family, and where she still lives. But she hankered after the foods of her childhood and mother's cooking, so she set about tracking down those recipes. And the result was an acclaimed book called Growing Up in a Nonya Kitchen, Singapore Recipes from My Mother, part cookbook, part memoir. Don't worry, we'll find out what Nonya means in a moment. She's going to publish an updated version later in the year, but she joins us now from New York. Sharon, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening to you, Steve, and good morning in New York.
No, I'm Philip, Sharon, but great to have you with us. It's early. I know it's early in the morning in New York, but late at night for us here in Australia. So, you know, we can feel a fragrant laksa coming on, or some meatballs or something very shortly. Tell us about the Singapore that you remember back in the 1970s. What was it like? How, I mean, it was the British, of course, had a legacy there, but was it mostly Chinese? Was it mostly Malay? What did it feel like?
It was very multi-ethnic. My family had very strong Anglophilic tendencies. To this day, we still have tea. And we still use a lot of English products. But growing up in the 70s, I saw a rapid transformation from the time when I was basically taking a bus to school, and now I have this massive subway station, or rather mass rapid transit station construction being built outside my gates. And school was very different in that sense that I was one of the very first who had to learn Mandarin as a second language, and I did not grow up speaking Mandarin. I came from a Peranakan family, or what you might also call Straits Chinese. My ancestors had put down roots in Singapore and as far back as Malacca hundreds of years ago, like maybe as early as the 1700s or even earlier.
Okay.
We basically spoke English, and I spoke Baba Malay, a patois, with my mother. And my sisters, I have five of them, they're much older than me. They actually learned Malay as a second language in the 50s and 60s, when Singapore was still part of Malaysia. And it was only in the 70s that they pivoted to Mandarin, because the government foresaw that China was going to be a superpower. So that was, you know, a struggle for me, because compared to classmates who were from, you know, Chinese immigrant families who came at a later time, I really, really couldn't grapple with Mandarin. And they had to put us in a different class altogether. And there were penalties. If you didn't really do very well in Mandarin, you couldn't go to the local university. But I have very nice classmates. They also tutored me after school so that I would at least pass the Cambridge A-levels for Mandarin. So that was something that was very different in the 70s. And also, I saw the tail end of the hawkers who came by my street every afternoon. Mm-hmm. There was a satay hawker. There was the char siew pao man on his tricycle. There was an ice cream vendor. My sisters remember the fish and chips man who came around on Fridays. That's all gone. I distinctly remember, and I put it down in my book. Yes, you know, my book is a memoir. I remembered the satay man coming with his bicycle, and we were all circling around him, joking and laughing, and then not realizing behind us was the Ministry of Environment van. And they came, they tapped him on the shoulder, and they said, okay, it's time's up. They hauled everything into the back of the truck, and we never saw him again.
Really? Oh,
So, and that was and as you know, right now the Hawker Centre in Singapore has been designated a UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage, and I witnessed, that transformation from
no.
the ones on the street. Right now, you have them in nicely built complexes spread out across the island.
Yeah. Tell me that term Nonya, the Nonya kitchen. What's Nonya?
So the overall term for this community is actually Peranakan. And Peranakan basically means native born. You can have Peranakan Indians, Peranakan Arabs, in fact, and Peranakan Chinese. And the Peranakan Chinese are the biggest component of this whole group. Now, within the Peranakan Chinese, there are two terms to be familiar with. One is Baba, which you term the men. You can be young, you can be old. You're just called a Baba. And Baba, as we all know, is an affectionate term for men in many cultures. Nonya actually derives from Donya, which is Portuguese. And that could very well be because the Peranakans originally started in Malacca, where the Portuguese ruled Malacca back in the 15, 1600s. So Nonya refers to the females. You could be young, you could be old. It does not mean auntie. You could be a young Nonya. The older women are actually called Bibis, not to confuse you. Now, what also happens is that there are certain terms sometimes paired with either masculine Baba or feminine Nonya. For example, the language is called Baba Malay. The food typically is called Nonya food. The clothes, like the kebaya, is a Nonya kebaya. And the house or the architecture is oftentimes called Baba House. Now, in my case, I called it a Nonya kitchen because for most Nonyas, in fact, all Nonyas, the kitchen was really the pride of place. It was the hub, it was the center of gravity. And for my mother, the kitchen was really her world.
I'm sure. Did she teach you how to cook, Sharon?
Sadly, she did not teach me as much as I would have liked. It's a genesis of the whole book was really in 2001. I had been away from home for about 9 years, and I began to miss home, miss the food. And it was right after Chinese New Year, and I said, "Mom, I would like to get your recipes for XYZ, all the favorite dishes that I liked." And she pulled them out, and I said, "Okay, I'm coming back in the summer, and I'm going, summer being July, August, and I will come back and learn from you." Unfortunately, I did not. I had some medical issues and I was stuck in New York. And very sadly, my mom got really, really ill and eventually she died in November of 2001. At that point, I pulled out all the other recipes. I hauled them back to New York and life as it is, happened. I had children, I moved homes, and that box stayed there for about 5 years. And then
All the treasures in that box, I can tell you, yeah.
it was one whole lump, and it was that proverbial, I'm doing this cookbook. If I sounded like a PhD student that kept saying that I was doing my thesis and I never got around to doing it. And I said, finally, I really have to
Good
get
on you.
this.
Hey, share something with us. Describe a recipe for us. Tell us about one of your favorite dishes from the book to share tonight. Maybe a meatball soup or prawn and shrimp meatballs with tofu.
Yes, that's the one. It's always been my favorite. It's called Pong Tau Hu. Some might actually call it Pong Tau Fu. That's the uniqueness about the Baba Malay language. It's a spoken language and there's not a formal language tied to it. I call it Pong Tau Hu. It's a pork, prawn, and tofu meatball. There's a combination of all three. The soup is a base of pork and prawn stock. Now, you would get this nice orange tinge to the soup because you make the prawn stock with all that shells, all those shells. You fry them until they turn a beautiful orange, and then you start brewing that stock for at least 2 hours. And then you combine it and you make this soup. Now, what I always treasure about this soup is it comes with bamboo shoots. And the mark of a refined nonya, and that's where you learn all these little nuances in your own culture, and this is what I learned, is that it's got to be sliced very finely. And that is sort of a notion that you are refined, you are delicate, you are very elegant
What are we
because you're
slicing? What are we slicing finely, Sharon? We're slicing what?
the bamboo shoots.
Bamboo shoots are sliced very finely. Okay.
Yes. So it's julienne, and it comes with the meatballs go into the soup, but along with the soup, you have the bamboo shoots, and they are this addition to the soup. It's almost
Are we putting the prawn meat in there as well?
the prawn meat is finely minced and added to the meatballs, and you shake the meatballs. So it's ground pork with the minced prawns and crushed soft tofu. You mix it all up, you marinate it with like soy sauce, white pepper, fried minced garlic, and then you marinate it, you roll them out into meatballs, and you drop them into this beautiful broth, soup stock. And along with that, you add these finely sliced bamboo shoots, and you garnish it with some coriander leaves. Now, it's wonderful for children if the child's not allergic to seafood. It's very appetizing. And typically, pong tao hu is something that we served for Chinese New Year in my family. There is a cousin to the soup that has crab meat, but this one only has prawns. And it's one of those celebration dishes that I very proudly love to have included in my Chinese.
I love, well, I think with crab meat, Sharon, it's always great when you can get someone else to extract the crab meat from the crab, isn't it? Because that's tedious. That's
Well,
tedious.
let's elevate it one step more and put lobster meat instead. And how's that?
Okay, so this is, well, this is delicious. So the meatballs are made with with minced pork, minced prawn.
Yes.
What else is in the meatballs, or that's it? No, and the tofu.
Soft tofu. Now, and also bearing in mind, not everybody eats pork. There, you can always substitute it with chicken.
Oh yeah, okay.
Right.
Delicious. You're right about the prawn stock. Making a prawn broth out of those toasted prawn shells. There's so much flavor in prawn shells, isn't there?
Oh, there is. And in my book, the new revised version, which is coming out in Australia in the middle of this year, I do dedicate a section on making stock. Because in many of the soups, especially for the celebration dishes, the stock is really crucial. It brings out the flavor.
Absolutely.
And particularly in Peranakan dishes, there are a lot of them that actually use prawn stock. So if you do have shrimp one night, don't discard those shells.
No.
Always freeze them.
Put them in the freezer. Put them in the freezer and make stock. Exactly.
Handy, yes, they come in handy. The more you have, the stronger your taste, if you like that.
Delicious. Sharon, it's been terrific talking with you. The book is called Growing Up in a Nonya Kitchen, Singapore Recipes from My Mother. And if you're familiar with that part of the world, you'll know that this is the authentic food. Sharon, good luck with the book, and I'm very hungry now. And the news break, no, it's too late. I haven't got time, but I'll be looking forward to it some later. Thanks for talking with us. Bye.
Thank you, Phil.
Bye.
Okay, take care. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Sharon Wee.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.